of Lake Effect Now, I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Every 2 years, Wisconsin names a state poet laureate. For 2015 and 2016, the Poet Laureate Commission chose Kimberly Blaser. In addition to being a working poet, Blaser also teaches creative writing, Native American literature, and American nature writing at UWM.
Blaser is of Anishinaabe ancestry, and she's a native of White Earth Reservation in northwestern Minnesota. Her poetry is infused with the stories of her ancestry, her experience of nature and native place, and the longing for spiritual connection.
She's the author of 3 poetry collections, and all have earned her national as well as international recognition. She joins us in the studio now and begins with her poem, Fantasies of Women.
They say there was an old woman who lived in a shoe. Children spanking bed, no food, it's an old story. One to rival the Peter tale, who kept his wife in a pumpkin shell. Or Jack Spratt, who coveted all the 90% lean cuts of meat, while his ever-expanding, squat, round wife tumbles over the sides of a tiny kitchen chair, overfilling the page on which she is drawn. We keep turning that page, but one caricature follows another. Some claim women always were the delicate sex, fainting, timid, helpless souls. You know that line. The length and breadth of those whose names have scrambled the letters of femininity into unrecognizable derivations, Annie Oakley, Gloria Steinem, Wilma Mankiller, Rigoberto Manchu, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, in pants or full veil, in every state of dress or undress, shares navel, the jewel on Cleopatra's forehead, burn like all beacons of descent. I heard, a nation is never defeated until the hearts of its women are trampled upon the earth. This one, I believe, for I grew up among women who could swallow a raw heart, whole or in infinitesimal pieces, deer heart, rabbit heart, turtle heart, and did swallow and chew and swallow their own red hearts beating for survival, for survival, for survival, for survival. And this is the single story we write with our lives. Women of travoy, ox, or minivan, of African brown barefoot toes, bound Asian feet, or $75 a pop Birkenstocks. Together, we walk our houses of history, track true the paths of indentured servants, girl babies slain and buried, this black dirt of bias exposed, overcome in story cycles of scarlet fecundity, told through the fires of many tongues, and translated again in the labor of women. Now we sing. There was a young woman who lived in a shoe-obsessed, commercialized, overstocked world. She had many children and knew just what to do, raise them to share the burdens of all the people, to unearth the fantastic lies they were taught to walk upon, to devour fear, chew and swallow, and to cast their hearts for survival.
Kimberly Blaser, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What a wonderful poem. What a wonderful poem. And I was sitting here thinking, well, actually listening and realizing that that is kind of the way that I love to receive poetry, is hearing it. Is that something as a poet that you like to do, that you like to deliver your work in that verbal way?
I do. I think that part of the power of poetry is the sound, obviously. And poetry arises out of our ancestry as oral people, right? And I think that we can get part of the meaning of poems through the musicality of it, through the sonics of poetry. So that's really important to me. And as is the sort of idea that people can memorize and, you know, have poetry that they carry with them. So they put it in their memory banks and they can pull it out when they need it and hear those phrases and those words in their own lives as they go through their daily experiences.
You're reminding me of when I was in grade school, we had to memorize poetry. That was one of the things that we did in our English classes. And I can remember memorizing the entire Midnight Rides of Paul Revere, however many 18 gazillion stanzas there were. I can remember like the first 3 or 4 lines now. But it was that effort of kind of learning and inhabiting that. It allowed you to inhabit the world of the poem in a different way.
Exactly. It does. And I love the idea that you did that. I did that too. And I know that our parents and grandparents, they memorized poems. And then I always say my father could recite poetry at the drop of a hat. He had poems that were just like his little personal library. And when he got macular degeneration and couldn't read, he still had poetry because he had it inside. He had it. He had memorized it. The idea of inhabiting the poem. When we feel our way around the language, and when we make the intonations and the connections with our own voice, I think we realize something about the meaning and about the way that it actually feels, you know, the way poetry can make you feel something more deeply when you speak the words.
Is that different from other uses of language, say short story or novel? Is poetry unique in that way?
Well, I come from a Native American background as well, so storytelling also has been a very strong oral tradition among Native peoples. I might have a slightly different perspective on that than other people because I do think of story also as having this oral reality because it's often told, performed, exchanged in a communal setting, and a lot of times you require almost other people there to engage in the story, verify the story, you know, be a part of it for it
fully
to come to life.
Story,
right,
yeah.
Exactly. So in that way, I think storytelling, too, is also very oral. But both poetry and story and creative nonfiction and so on, I mean, good literature can also be studied. You can engage in it on the page, but you're still bringing something to the page. You're bringing something to the page that wasn't there. So it comes alive in a way. And it just comes alive more when there's also that element of engaging with the actual oral quality of the language.
Yeah, the sounds of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you are Wisconsin's Poet Laureate. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
And what does that mean for you both as a poet, as an educator, as a Native person? What does that mean?
Well, it is such an honor is the first thing. And I've been saying that for weeks, but it's still true. I feel very honored by this. I'm excited about the opportunity to connect with Wisconsin poets and lovers of poetry, to have the option of creating programs, of supporting the arts throughout the state. And then, of course, it's just a wonderful opportunity for me to focus a little more intently on my own work as a poet or as an artist.
You were saying that it's such an honor to be able to connect in this way. What does the office allow you to do that you can't do in any other way with poetry? What kind of power does it give you?
I've been surprised by how much attention it has brought already to me and opportunities to connect with people that I didn't know were out there working in poetry. So I think exposure is one thing, invitations to be a part of projects or programming, but then also I have to learn to take the stage and create my own projects, and I'm excited about that, and to get all ages involved and people from all walks of life. It doesn't have to be literary people. It can be, you know, the mailman or a cab driver or whatever.
Is that one of the challenges that you face, is that so many people don't think poetry has a place in their lives?
I think so. I think it's like many things in the arts where we're excited about it. We do it. It gives us such an important part to our lives when we're younger. And then people leave school and they get involved in a career that's maybe engineering. And what happens to that whole excitement about the arts? And do they feel like they still have the option to continue that? And I want to encourage people to keep that alive, and because it continues to contribute something to our life. I mean, if nothing else, beauty, right? But beyond that, I think, for example, poetry, right? If you think about being engaged with poems, it allows you to have a language in which to understand your own experience. Someone else has been there. They've written a poem about it. It helps you walk through your daily life and have someone else by your side who's been there too. Or if you're writing poetry, it might help you figure out your experience. How do I deal with this? What do I think about this? What is it I'm longing for in my life? What do I, you know, there's all these questions that we have. We can work through those in language. It doesn't have to be poetry that you're going to send out for publication. It can be for you.
Now, focusing on you rather than the ideas behind what the Poet Laureate might do, but mm-hmm. a lot of your poetry deals with the natural world.
Yes.
And you use that as the prism through which you explore your place in the universe and are all of our places in the universe. Was that always the case? Has the natural world always been a palette that you've used in your poetry?
If I think about the natural world, it's always been a part of my experience. And what we see, where the places we inhabit, what we do with our daily lives, that becomes a part of us. And so the way that we understand and interact with the world sort of comes out of that space. So I grew up fishing and berry picking and, you know, all the kinds. I was out in nature with my parents and my relatives. And I established a relationship with place, right, and with creatures of the natural world and plants and seasons and sky. And you know what I'm saying? That there is a way in which I say are apprentice to place, and that as you inhabit and become inhabited by that place, there is a reciprocity, a give and take relationship. And that's part of the way that I was taught to engage with the natural world. So if that is my own way of being in the world, then when I write out of a perspective that is informed by that kind of a relationship too.
Yeah.
You know, not think, but for a moment, just feel. Enter.
Is that important when you write poetry to stop thinking?
It is, I think. There are different, you know, phases you go through in creating a poem, I think. And the first phase is you just write. And you don't, you know, look at every little thing and say, oh, not this, not that. You just let your mind make the connections freely and kind of write through the poem. And then you can go back and, you know, pick at every little comma or, you know, think about different arrangements or whatever. But I really do believe that there's a sense in which that the poem becomes a search. I don't go into a poem knowing where it's going. I go into it as a process. And that part of that process is letting the language and the ideas and the connections take over. Sorry if this sounds odd, but we need to let go of holding on. We need to be possessed by rather than hold tightly to our control of language.
We have to enter into the agreement with language as well.
Exactly right. Yes.
Well, before I ask you to read one more poem for us, looking ahead at this year as Poet Laureate, what is the one thing you hope most that you accomplish with that title?
That's a hard question. I'm thinking of small different segments of things I'd like to do. And maybe, though, all of those sort of small segments lead up to simply putting poetry on a bigger stage in the state of Wisconsin, or I'd like to say putting poetry to work in Wisconsin. Because one of the things that I think about poetry is it should be both beautiful as language and it should do something in the world. So I think there are lots of ways in which poetry could benefit the people in the state of Wisconsin. So I want to put it to work in Wisconsin.
Well, I hope that you'll bring some of those things back at the end of your tenure. When is that, a year or two years?
So you have
a couple of years to do this. So I hope along the way that maybe some of those projects can find their way back here.
That would be great.
All right. Yeah. Well, Kimberly, I want to say thank you so much for coming in. And again, congratulations on being Wisconsin's Poet Laureate. And what are you going to leave us with?
I think I'll leave you with a wild rice poem, since wild rice is an important thing in Wisconsin and Minnesota and among Native people. Menomen Ike Gizis. Ricing moon when polling arms groan like autumn winds through white pine. Old rhythms find the hands, bend and pound the rice kernels falling onto wooden ribs, canoe bottoms filling with memories. New moccasins dance the rice. Huffs of spirit wind lift and carry the chaff, blown like tired histories from birch bark winnowing baskets. Now numbered by pounds, seasons, or generations, lean slivers of parched grain, subtle, brown, and rich, tasting of northern lakes, of centuries.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Kim Blazer is Wisconsin's Poet Laureate for 2015 and 2016. She's also a professor in the Departments of English and American Indian Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She read us Fantasies of Women and Monoman Ikegizus.
We'll take one last break and then return with the latest installment of Precious Lives. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.